Welcome back to Michelle Yeoh Death Spiral, the only Michelle Yeoh fan cast that has zero restraining orders filed against it as of the date of this recording. I cannot say that that's going to remain true in the future, but that's for the courts to decide.
What is this? This is like you're trying to make up for the time lost with Intensity?
I am. The phrase.
You're such a latecomer to Michelle Yeoh fandom that now you have to like go four times as hard to not look like a poser.
Well, you know, there is no fanatic like a convert. It is true of traditional Catholicism, and it is true of Wuxia films. I have to admit that I have not been the biggest fan of Wuxia. In the past, I like a lot of classic kung fu movies, and then when it started getting into the more like wire fu stuff, for whatever reason, my personal catalog on like wuxia movies has never been that pronounced.
You're woefully uninformed.
I'm woefully undereducated.
You're ignorant.
It's not out of a lack of desire. I want to make that very clear. I like these movies. I think they're a great old time.
You just simply couldn't be bothered.
You know, there's only a finite amount of time on this planet. All of our lives are a ticking time bomb until we inevitably rot in the ground.
I learned that from Lazarus.
Yeah. Are you still watching that? I dropped that already.
I watched the second episode yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Took a long time to get through White Lotus.
That Jason Isaacs. Rawr.
Jason Isaacs is pretty cool.
You know, I have seen Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, because everybody saw that. Great movie. And I've seen, like, I don't know what exactly, what are the limits on counting something as wuxia? I've seen Jet Li's Hero. Does that count as a wuxia movie?
That very much counts as a wuxia movie, yes.
What's the one where he gets treated like a dog?
That is not wuxia. That is not even remotely wuxia. You're sprinting in the opposite direction.
I'm going the other way.
House of Flying Daggers.
Sure.
Detective D.
Iron Monkey.
I'm not sure that's epic enough. You know, there is an epicness to wuxia in sort of the Lord of the Rings vein.
Okay, sure. Kind of like more of a historical gravitas attached to it.
There is usually, there is usually court intrigue. There's a lot of like, imperial palace stuff in a lot of them. There's somebody fleeing from some kind of noble scandal. Mm-hmm. That happens a lot.
Sure.
But ultimately, they all converge on this sort of like aesthetic plane where man and God kind of exist in the same place so people can do like crazy magic shit. But it's not like full-on Lord of the Rings magic shit. It is like, I have trained my body for 1,000 years so that when I get shot with a gun, the bullet doesn't go through me. A thing you can do in real life if you try hard enough.
Catching bullets with your mind, shooting them back with your mouth.
It's cool shit.
You know, I obviously what turned me on to wuxia most recently, it would be the national craze from last year for Everything Everywhere All at Once. You know, I think that is probably the most high profile wuxia movie.
You gotta stop.
A friend of mine picked up a copy of Michelle Yeoh's Heroic Trio,
a movie you should have watched over a year ago when I told you to, but you sat on that one for a while.
Yeah, well, you know, you tell me to watch a lot of stuff, okay?
I know, and you always choose not to, and instead watch bad things. I really don't understand the impulse.
Listen, I have a disability. It's called oppositional defiance disorder, and, you know, if you tell me to do something, I just won't do it. I just can't do it, okay? So I need you to respect my boundaries. You can't lead a horse to water.
Yeah, and I mean, I know, I understand. That's why you got into anime to begin with.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I say something like Near Dark is one of the best vampire movies, and then you watch From Dusk Till Dawn instead, I gotta say, that's very hurtful.
First of all, I've seen Near Dark. It was good. It was a good movie. I just don't think it's like it cracked my top five vampire movies.
Yeah, but From Dusk Till Dawn is a terrible movie that should not be watched. It fucking sucks, man. That movie sucks so bad.
Well,
that's not even one of the, like, okay, if I sit down, I can objectively say, like, there are some great Tarantino moments. That is not even, like, not even remotely there.
You didn't like the scene where he gets to drink tequila off of Selma Hayek's foot? That wasn't doing it for you?
No, you know what? I don't like that. I really don't. And you know what? Putting him next to George Clooney to begin with is such a jarring juxtaposition. I feel like it's too distracting to even pay attention to the movie.
Okay, to be fair, my watch partner,
he's a gremlin.
My watch partner has been doing a long form Dracula vampire movie marathon, and they've been going by decades, and that was one of the ones from the 90s that they had never seen. So there was a thoroughly logical reason to watch From Dusk Till Dawn when we did. I had not seen it myself since I was probably 15, so like 60 years ago.
I haven't seen Smoking Aces since I was 15. I'm not throwing that shit on.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I think I might. I remember liking Smoking Aces quite a bit.
You're gonna go back for the Smoking Aces?
Maybe. Hey, that might be Chris Pine's best movie.
You could double bill it with like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and really get
I was thinking Josh Hartnett, what's that movie he was in? Lucky Number Slevin. Remember that one?
Oh, Slevin? Oh, Jesus
Christ. Great title. Great title.
I mean, it's stuck in my mind, sort of like X versus Sever. I don't know what that's supposed to be, but I've remembered it to this day.
Wasn't that...
I also remember there was a GameCube game. They made a game... Not a GameCube game. A Game Boy game out of that fucking movie. I thought that was the craziest shit.
I always got the feeling that with that one, because it was something. That wasn't the full title. It was... something.
It was ballistic colon X, yes, versus Sever.
They didn't expect people to be totally sold on the title Ballistic, and so they had to add in some kind of, you know, we have to tell them who we're seeing here. Obviously, they're not going to go see Ballistic. They have to know that X and Sever are in it, and they're versus each other.
They're in it, sort of like an X-Files thing, but I guess there's gun-fu in that movie. Is that a gun-fu movie?
I think so, yeah. I would count that as gun-fu.
So, like, it's like a Wanted, sort of like a Wanted style.
God, I have not thought about Wanted in a long time.
Maybe like a sci-fi Wanted.
Wanted was sci-fi already. They were bending bullets with their magical monk powers. Like, remember that was the plot of the of the Wanted movie.
Sure. Equilibrium.
Yeah, Equilibrium. Oh, what is that, the one with Charlton Copley in it?
Equilibrium?
Yeah.
I don't know if Charlton Copley's in it, but Christian Bale and Sean Bean are.
What's the one I'm thinking? Not Oblivion. That's the Tom Cruise movie. Oh, it was the follow-up movie, Elysium. I'm thinking of Elysium with Charlton Copley and Matt Damon.
Yeah, was that gun-fu? I never saw it.
It was not really gung-fu. It was like they had super-powered exoskeletons that gave them, like, kind of kung-fu powers. But it was mostly just them punching each other with, like, these wires attached to their arms, from what I remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's sort of just kung-fu.
Yeah.
I'm thinking more like The Equalizer.
Well, no, The Equalizer is absolutely not gun-fu. That's just an action movie.
He does tactical moves. He's a tactical move kind of guy.
I think we're missing the forest for the trees here, in that I think gun-fu, John Wick, is kind of the shining example.
Well, John Wick, of course, but yeah. you know how I feel about those movies. I prefer, like The Bourne Identity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, those are okay movies. They're kind of fun.
The Mission Impossibles.
There's not a lot of gun-fu in Mission Impossible. There's actually not a lot of gunplay in general.
It would take away from the spectacle of Tom doing the stunts.
Yeah, it's usually about watching Tom, like, drown or, like, fall out of a plane or climb a tall building or, you know, do a motorcycle jump. The rest of the stuff is like, whatever.
Doesn't he punch a guy off a plane? Doesn't he have a fist fight on a plane wing?
He punches two guys. No, he's always punching guys in planes, but in the most recent one, he punches two different plane guys very quickly in a row, and it's fantastic. It's great. It's true filmmaking. You don't see that kind of shit anymore.
True cinema.
You do not see guys punching old-timey pilots out of the air in modern cinema anymore, and it's a shame. It's a real shame.
I am so intrigued on why he was punching an old-timey pilot and not, like, you know, a spy guy or someone, a goon. Why an old man?
Oh, well, there aren't really spy guys anymore. Like, in the last couple of movies, it became more of, like, a Final Fantasy plot where, like, a cyberspace god has escaped, and it's, like, bringing on like a sort of doomsday apocalypse scenario where it will control all of humanity after launching a bunch of nukes and changing reality to its own whims. And Tom Cruise is the only guy who can stop it because I guess he can hold his breath for a really long time. But there is straight up, like, at the end of the movie, the main villain just starts saying video game boss shit, which is some of the funniest shit ever. He just becomes a video game boss, like, in the last third of the movie, and he's saying stuff like, "It's futile to resist me," or, like, "I will rule the world now, ha 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 ha." It's so great. It's so great.
Tom, you have to destroy the giant enemy AI and attack its weak point on its back.
You know, it's sort of like it becomes a point where people are basically treating him like if Shinji was like a Chad. They're like, you gotta get back in the sub, Tom. You gotta get back in the sub. And he's like, I was going to. You don't have to tell me. I was already gonna get in the sub. You don't have to keep telling me.
Yeah, I really don't like it when people tell me to do something that I was already going to do. Like,
I was actually going to do it already.
I was already going to do it.
Run after that plane, Tom. So if you don't do it, Simon Pegg will have to do it again.
Is he still in those movies?
Yeah, he's in almost all of them.
Well, good for him. Get the bag, I guess.
He's it's one of the more enduring aspects of the series. I prefer Rebecca Ferguson, but she didn't. Spoilers, she didn't make it. To the end. Yeah, I was pretty bummed about that.
Well,
she's,
you know,
so
she had to make time in her shooting schedule to film Dr. Sleep 2.
I was thinking Dune 3.
Are they still making Dune movies? I thought we were done with that.
No, there's like a whole other one. Like, he in the end of the last one, he had just taken out the Harkonnen kid.
Yeah, he beat the Harkonnens, and that was the happy ending.
No, we got to at least get to the part where they start cloning Duncan Idaho. Like, I don't even like these movies, but if they don't get there, I'm like, what was the point? I want thousands of Duncan Idahos, like what George ripped off for, what was it, episode 2, episode 3, The Clone Wars?
Uh-huh.
He was just doing Duncan Idaho.
No, I think we all figured out how much George was ripping off Dune when he said, like, oh yeah, and they've got like a drug that they mine from desert planets called spice. That's just in Star Wars.
So he's sort of a destiny child, and he lives on a sand planet. And, you know, people treat him like the Messiah because he's got a lot of midichlorians.
You know, he's in conflict with the Galactic Emperor.
It's actually, it's really tragic story. It's sort of like Shakespearean.
Oh, man. Okay, we've gotten off topic of where I wanted to go with this. I wanted to talk about Michelle Yeoh and her
okay. What do you want to talk about Michelle Yeoh? You haven't watched Yes, Madam. You haven't watched Police Story 3.
Well, I have watched The Heroic Trio and the follow-up film, Executioners, The Heroic Trio 3. And I just want to say that those were a damn fun time.
Yeah, they fucking whip.
I'm trying to, like, pin down because, you know, we were talking about an anime that may kind of tie into that whole theme of like three girl bosses doing girl boss shit, which is basically what those two movies are about. Although, like, the setting shift from the first one to the second is so wild. You know, we have our three leads. We have Michelle Yeoh, Maggie Cheung, and Anita Mui, who each were, from what I saw on their filmographies, which were included on the DVD,
Love that for them.
Love that feature. They were all big Hong Kong movie stars for, you know, years before they made this movie together. So we've got the heroic trio that are basically, it's like a superhero team up movie, but with no setup to it.
The best kind.
Yeah. Maybe Marvel has it wrong. Maybe you don't need to do like 3 decades worth of setup movies to have these big event films. Maybe you can just like have the characters meet and then they do stuff and then the movie
ends. Oh, that's what I've been saying. Imagine if you went to Avengers Endgame and that was like the first one.
It was just that.
All your guys would be in there. You'd be able to be like, oh shit, they got Black Panther in there. They got Spider-Man in there. Doctor Strange is in there. Yeah, this movie kicks ass. And then we didn't have to suffer through like 20 other ones.
I want to imagine a world like that. I really do.
What a beautiful world.
Yeah.
What a beautiful world it would have been.
So, this one we've got Maggie Cheung playing Wonder Woman. No relation. Michelle Yeoh as the Invisible Girl and Anina Mui as Thief Catcher is her alias.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
You know, and I like the characterization that they set up in, you know, their dynamic. Because they're kind of doing that thing where they're each their own lone wolf and then they have to learn to work together.
Yeah.
And Michelle Yeoh herself starts off as kind of like a villain character before she has a change of heart. And I really liked that they had, or at least they were trying to set up them having like 3 distinct separate sets of skills. Because you got Maggie Cheung, and her thing is that she's doing like the crazy wire foo, Wuxia Wang Chung type of fighting, where she can jump over buildings in a single bound. You know, she can like kick bullets out of the air and stuff and flick
yes,
them
I
back.
Mean not particularly impressive, because this is kind of thing you could learn how to do with just a few years of training.
It's true. Yeah, anybody can do it.
You know, if you dedicated your body and soul to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you have an iron will of discipline, you can do anything.
Yeah, I mean, eventually magic gets introduced, and that's a little more impressive. But, the bounding is like, oh, okay.
And her whole thing is that she's the most classically Batman of them, because she's kind of like this Wuxia Kung Fu superhero that stops crime by night and is the wife of a high profile. I think he's the commissioner. She's like married to Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah, something like that.
And so she's doing the supermom thing during the day and fighting crime at night. And then you've got Anita Mui as Thief Catcher. And she's kind of like a like motorcycle badass, and her power is gun. She is doing gun fu. Like, that's her whole thing. She rides up and she's like, she'll ride up and do a sweet kick flip on her motorcycle and shoot it at people with her legs.
Incredible.
And then she's got a shotgun. That's her other power, is she has a shotgun that she shoots people with in the head.
Also very cool.
Also very neat. And then you have Michelle Yeoh, who is kind of like the semi-villain. You know, she has invisibility powers because she's married to a doctor who's trying to invent invisibility, but he doesn't know that she already invented it, but she doesn't tell him because she doesn't want to, like, show him up. And she's working for an evil wizard who's stealing babies because... because he's trying to put his spirit into one of the babies so he can become the next emperor of China. That's kind of like a big sticking point in this movie, is there's some prophecy that China must always have an emperor.
Well, that's what makes it Wuxia, is that there's an emperor involved.
Okay. All right. So I want to come back to that when we talk about Heroic Trio 2.
Oh, sure.
But... and so that's kind of the setup, is there's this mysterious, babies are disappearing because this wizard, this evil wizard who lives in the sewers underneath the city, is trying to
pretty sick.
turn one of the babies into a magic emperor, and he's like, all right, I'll turn one of them into the emperor, and then I'm going to turn the rest into kung fu zombies, like this guy over here.
And the reason he's a villain is that he is trying to do this into, like, babies, whereas a good guy would only, like, resurrect his soul into, like, somebody who died from, like, hitting their head, falling over when they're too drunk in a bar fight, or, you know, somebody who gets snagged in an undertow and drowns.
Well,
those are really the more polite ways to take over a body. It's kind of the good guy style.
Sure, sure. And I think part of the big distinction there is that, like, if you're going to be taking over someone's body, it should be like an adult body, right? I think that's probably a big part of it.
Well, you know how I feel about Isekai.
And then if you have a bunch of spare bodies that you don't inhabit after that, it is only polite to let the other ones go instead of, say, blowing them up with dynamite, which is something that happens. Michelle Yeoh does blow up a bunch of babies with dynamite at the end of this movie.
Yeah, it's sick. It's cool guy shit. fucking rocks.
Yo, and a bunch of cool kung fu stuff happens in between, but that's the general bare bones of it. And I was like, okay, I was super jazzed on this after I watched it. It was a great time. Love the stunts. Love the characters. Love that there's just like a dude that gets shoved into an incinerator and then he's fine afterward.
Oh, yeah.
Like he's just got some burn marks on him.
Again, a thing that you could do yourself if you had enough willpower and training.
Well, yeah, you it's know, like a swami walking over hot coals.
Yeah.
Anything can be accomplished with the power of the mind.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of like the whole thing. I liked it. They meet up, you know, they kind of do that thing where the heroes are against each other at first, and then they fight and they hash out their differences, and then they realize they're all working towards the same goals. Every superhero movie ever has ripped off that exact plot.
Well, whenever there's a team up, that's how all team ups have to work.
Yeah. Especially if the team up is highlighting three, like, distinct characters. Like, all right, everyone's trying to be the lead, right? And we have to hash out our differences to see how we're going to work together as a team.
Well, what is the main problem of getting three badasses together? It's the personalities. It's the ego clash. Everybody wants to big dog each other. So, like, that is the conflict for the first third of any of these movies.
Yeah.
Is just the three characters big dogging each other until, like, a fourth character comes in and big dogs all of them. And then they got to kill that guy.
Like Arnold in The Expendables.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
We watched that, had a great time, loved it, decided like, okay, there's a sequel to the Heroic Trio 2: Executioners. Let's roll right into it. And I don't know, I'm trying to think of other franchises where the immediate sequel to the first movie has such an extreme, like, not only tone shift, but, like, setting shift. Because what we've done with Executioners is we've gone from, like, pretty standard 90s modern-day cityscape kung fu movie to cut to 3 years later in-universe. And it is a dystopian hellscape a la, like, Escape from New York, where the world has been ravaged by nuclear war and everyone is scavenging for clean water. And there's like a Phantom of the Opera who runs Nestle, and he's like extorting all of the people in the world for clean water. And he stages a military coup with his like pretty boy twink as the face of his secret, like, paramilitary organization that's controlling the president.
Well, I love this movie, so I don't want to like shit talk it. But what you are describing is Mad Max. It's the Road Warrior to Mad Max transition.
Oh my God, you're right. You're so right.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to mention, I don't know if you are even familiar, but you know, both of these movies were directed by Johnny Toe, like pretty early in his career, who is absolutely fucking legendary. Not super well known for his kung fu movies, but he got really into directing like Chinese crime movies. Like, so he did the two big ones are Election and Election 2, which if you watch these back to back with the Heroic Trio, I don't think you would guess like in a million years it was the same guy, but just as good. Really, really fucking rule. Johnny Toe is an interesting guy.
No, I've never heard of those. I assume it has nothing to do with the Chris Rock movie, The Election.
It does not. It is much better than any Chris Rock movie I can think of.
Okay.
they're like very good movies.
So, Mad Max is a great comparison. I really like when franchises do kind of like that big shift. I think that it probably can go the wrong way for a lot of people sometimes. I think we're seeing that. Another kind of comparison that just popped in my head, I think we're seeing that with the recent Doom game that came out. Have you played any of that yet?
No, I didn't want to pay. What was it? It was one of those games that came out for $70.
80 bucks, I think.
80 bucks. It's part of the new wave. And I was like, you know what? I have enough $10 games I've bought recently that I think I might sit this one out.
Yeah, I've not played the Dark Ages yet as well, although it was a day one Game Pass release. But from what I'm hearing, it's kind of like the modern Doom franchise is doing that with each one. You know, you have Doom 2016 and then Doom Eternal. Very big gameplay shift in the way it handles and like how it wants you to play. And then Doom the Dark Ages apparently is just a straight up like medieval hack and slash game with very little or minimal gun work to it.
I don't know much about it, but I do think there's like, doesn't Doom guy get sent back in time? Isn't that what happened?
He probably goes through some kind of demon portal or temporal rift or touches a time doohickey. I don't know. I think he does go back in time, and more importantly, he does the thing that you're never supposed to do with a protagonist like Doom Guy. He takes his helmet off, like, a lot.
Oh, yeah?
Like, a lot, yeah.
Oh, well, I'm glad I didn't play it then.
Yeah.
In that case, I'm very glad.
So, not sure how I feel about that. I can tell you from the Halo TV show, taking off the helmet is always a bad choice, it seems like.
Did you watch any of that?
I watched a little bit of it. I watched the first episode, but I could not bring myself to carry on with it. It was baffling.
Grim.
Yeah. And I cannot get over that they got the creepy cop from Orange is the New Black.
Oh,
the rapey prison guy.
I was gonna say Wire season 2.
Well, I'm sure he likes to put that one higher up on his resume than the rapey cop from Orange is the New Black.
Yeah. What about he was in American Gods as well? Didn't he play the very tall leprechaun?
Yes, he played the very tall leprechaun. Is that guy actually Irish? I don't know. If not, I was about to call his accent bad, but if he is, then I'm not gonna say that.
I don't think he is.
Well, then he has a bad accent, and it sounded bad, and I could totally tell that he wasn't Irish.
Damn, you got his ass.
Anyway, that's all I wanted to get off my chest. Wuxia films are very cool, and I want to start watching more of them.
Yeah, okay, so are you ready? Are you prepared now to dive into this world?
I think so. I mean, so we've watched Detective D together before.
Many times.
And I love that movie. That's great. Yeah.
I've watched all of them, and they're all fucking great.
They're all really good. I liked Hero, although I have to admit, and as much as I know you hate to bring Tarantino back into the conversation, the sole reason that I did go to see Hero in theaters when I was like 14 was because of its production association with Quentin Tarantino. So as much as you hate the man, you have to give him his credit when it comes to he got me into a theater to see a foreign movie.
I refuse.
You can't keep holding out.
Usually people would say that about like Scorsese, just to save face, you know, but I guess I appreciate your honesty. Me, I'm built different. I was already watching this shit.
All right. Well, let me ask you this.
I was on this trade.
Give me like a top five list to go off of here.
I could give you a top five that just have Donnie Yen in them.
Ip Man 1 through 5. Is that what you're going to say?
Okay. The first three Ip Man, I would say, are essential. I don't know if I'd call them Wuxia as more classic Kung Fu, but Ip Man, yes, absolutely. Like, why haven't you watched those movies? They're fucking great.
I have actually watched Ip Man 3. That's the one with Mike Tyson in it, right?
that was either 3 or 4.
Whichever one has Mike Tyson in it is the one I've seen.
That one is so terrible. No, that does not count. You got to go back. You need to go back and watch the good ones. That's not okay.
Okay. All right.
You know, if we're talking about ones that aren't set in like Imperial China, there's a few I really like. You know, Dragon Tiger Gate, obviously, I think is absolutely fantastic. Like, anybody who has not seen Dragon Tiger Gate needs to get on that shit as fast as possible. You know, obviously, the big ones are like Once Upon a Time in China. You should watch all of those movies. I think there's 4 of those as well. Maybe 3.
Okay.
They're all good. And then Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, obviously, is the biggest one. But Hero is really great. I would say House of Flying Daggers is one of the, like, big tentpole ones that is fantastic. Black and White is a fantastic one. That one's got more magic stuff in it. So if you prefer to watch soul cultivation or, like, ascetic monks or, like, the magic-y kind of stuff, that is a really good one for you. If you just want to, like, find something to watch, just Google Donnie Yen and you will find good shit other than, you know, his Western appearances where he just does show up as the Asian kung fu master in all, like, Western movies. It really sucks.
Oh, like in Star Wars?
it's Star Wars and John Wick recently. In John Wick, he's the blind master, too, so they got a whole other angle in it.
Wait, are you sure you're not thinking of Star Wars? Because he was the blind master in Star Wars movie, too.
He is also a blind master in John Wick. Can you believe disrespect?
Hollywood loves to typecast.
It's so disrespectful. It's so disrespectful.
True Legend. Do you remember that one?
Sure, sure.
That was a great time. I love that concept of, like, crazy cartoon, like, wire foo happening across multiple generations of this guy's life. That was a great setup. You know, especially the whole drunken arc or the drunken master arc to his movie where he's, like, trying to fight the British out of China. Oh man, that movie kicks ass.
It's a righteous fight, brother. And of course, you know, the Kung Fu Panda movies.
Well, sure. All 4 of those go straight to the top.
Oh, there's got to be more than
I hate to say it, those might have more in common with anime than most Wuxia films.
Unfortunately, yes. And you know, go watch those Stephen Chow movies. They're not necessarily Wuxia, but they make fun of Wuxia in a lot of them. And they're just great. You know, they're just fantastic. Really great movies.
Have not seen any Stephen Chow's Kung Fu movies, but I have seen...
You haven't seen Kung Fu Hustle?
Oh, well, I have seen Kung Fu Hustle, and I have seen Shaolin Stalker.
So you have.
Yeah, okay.
So you actually have.
I'm thinking of someone else.
You're thinking of Keanu Reeves.
God, I wish I was thinking of Keanu Reeves right now. No, who is the guy that was in... Bulletproof Monk. Do you remember that? With Sean William Scott?
Yeah, I do remember that. I don't remember who was in it. Was that just like... That feels like a Chow Yun-Fat late period role.
Oh, you know what? You're right. It is Chow Yun-Fat.
Yeah.
That was the one where he could Kung Fu Matrix bullets.
In the 2000s, he was taking those Donnie Yen roles where he would just, like, show up as the Kung Fu master in random shit.
Oh, God. Remember when they had Chow Yun-Fat show up as Master Roshi in the American Dragon Ball movie?
I don't think about that movie a lot, except for that part where he's on the car.
All right. I think I've gone on long enough about Wuja movies. Let's bring it back home a little bit. Have you watched any anime?
Yeah, I watched some Wuja anime, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Now that I see you trying to escape this this topic. If you remember a few episodes ago, maybe I mentioned a Chinese Pokemon anime.
Pow World.
No, not Pow World.
Oh, then,
it was a Chinese Pokemon anime.
Remind me a little bit of the setup here. Did they have to kung fu fight the Pokemon?
I mean, yes, they do, actually. They do. they do kung fu fight the Pokemon. No joke. It's pretty great.
Well, I mean, there were actual Pokemon that were just based off of Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan, you know, directly. And I always wondered why they didn't have, like, people just straight up fighting those Pokemon. Do you think those Pokemon enter human fighting tournaments? Do you think they're allowed to?
No, but I do think, like, boxers and MMA guys practice on their Pokemon. I do think that is what happened. In one of those, like, fan-made, like, grimdark Pokemon short movies. There's definitely one of those.
Man, I gotta say, I am, just real quick, I'm so glad that we're moving out of the YouTube era of gritty, like, dark fan-made, like, fan project movies. I'm so glad that we're finally moving past that. Because, man, it was really getting to me.
Yeah, I mean, I am glad too, but I also feel like the reason we're moving away from that is because all of those guys got jobs and they're making them for real.
Oh, no. With the monkey paw, the monkey's paw curls again.
Yes, exactly. the Wuja Chinese Pokemon anime is called The All-Devouring Whale. And the Wuja elements are made incredibly clear within the first 2 seconds. First of all, there's court intrigue, there's an emperor, everybody's wearing like those incredibly intricate Chinese robes. Everybody is like either some kind of ascetic monk or a sect cult soul cultivation practitioner or, you know, some kind of kung fu master. In this version, soul cultivation isn't quite as, let's say, grim and brutal as it usually is portrayed in like Chinese fantasy stuff. I don't know if you're too into soul cultivation.
Well, I'm
since you haven't even done a lot of Wuxia stuff.
I know. I am somewhat familiar. You showed me a couple soul cultivation games that you were playing a while ago. I got the general idea of how it works, but for lack of a better term, growing and building up your soul power over generations or maybe perceived generations. Am I getting that close?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is about immortality. Like, generally, soul cultivators are people seeking immortality through this sort of, like, semi-mythological combination of, like, Taoism and Buddhism and kind of a lot of Chinese, like, folklore. And a lot of it involves people trying to live forever by stealing, let's not say stealing, by absorbing the souls of like other mythological creatures. And, you know, every once in a while, maybe a person gets in there. Maybe you suck the soul out of a person, you know. It happens if you're soul cultivating.
It happens sometimes.
Sometimes it happens. You know, they have souls like any other animal. It's really like what separates the man from the beast, you know? Just currency, right?
Well, thumbs and fiat currency.
It's mostly fiat currency. I think that's the answer. Because, like, you know, a sloth has a thumb, a raccoon has a thumb.
I mean, raccoons are the most dangerous animals on earth because of the thumb.
Yeah, but nobody bats an eye when you soul cultivate out of a raccoon's body. Nobody cares.
True. But when you cultivate out of a stockbroker's body, that's different.
Yeah, now everybody's, or, you know, a CEO of a healthcare company. You're not supposed to do that because people get upset. But in the Chinese Pokemon, instead of absorbing the creatures into kind of like a big soul pool that you draw your power from, mm-hmm. through meditation, through asceticism, which is the separation of the self from the world, It's a lot about isolation, giving away your humanity. We kind of leave most of those elements behind and instead focus on the capturing of creatures, as you would imagine from a Chinese Pokemon. Now, it's made very unclear whether these are actual creatures that, like, exist out in the world or if they are actual spiritual manifestations, because they are called spiritual pets. Right out of the gate, we're talking about spiritual creatures.
Seems a bit disrespectful. You know, if someone is absorbing my soul for their own benefit, I would not want to be described as a pet at that point.
It is condescending, for sure. But also, like, why do Pokemon tolerate it?
Well, you know, I think...
What do they get out of it?
I mean, have you ever been inside of a Pokeball? It's pretty fucking sweet.
You think it's like a genie's lamp?
I always assumed that it was kind of a genie's lamp situation. Like, you know, maybe they have just kind of like a little condo in there that they can hang out in. They've got like a tiny hot tub, maybe a tiny a tiny TV to play games on. I really hope that it's something like that, because the other option is that you're kind of putting them into this like suspended animation state inside of this tiny ball, and the only time that they get taken out,
I assume it's a void.
You think it's a void?
I think they just go into the void,
because I think that kind of makes it more of a living hell, right? You know, I have no mouth and I must scream kind of situation.
I think that's exactly what it is.
Because imagine their existence from their perspective then. You know, you get taken out of the Pokeball. You have to fight for your life in a multi-round match, often getting poisoned or just beat unconscious. And then you go back in the ball and your ability to perceive is suspended until your next fight. From their point of view, that's just a never-ending lifetime of pain. Until, like, you either get euthanized or let go.
Yeah, exactly. That is exactly what I am positing.
Oh, God,
is
I'm
what
doing
happens
it. I'm doing the gritty, like, modern...
You're doing the grimdark.
The grimdark fan.
Yes.
God.
Don't be too hard on yourself. This is the mental illness that all millennials share, is the inclination to make grimdark Pokemon fantasies. In this version, it is even less clear, because instead of a Pokeball... you use sort of your spiritual essence to create an energy pocket, and they just hop in. They just get in.
So you can just make a little pocket dimension, they just hop into you.
Yeah, no Pokeballs necessary. You don't have to grind for cash to buy more Pokeballs. They just, like, get in. They just get into your spiritual pocket.
And, like, is this after some kind of kung fu display of dominance? Like, how do you make them bend the knee to you?
Well, in a twist of mercy, compared to Pokemon where you have to beat them into unconsciousness and then capture them, physically capture them, it's more about a mutual respect. Like, you implore the spiritual creature for their aid, and they choose to help you based on your spiritual power. No matter how kind and respectful you are, if you have a low spiritual power, it's just not happening.
Okay. All right.
So hit the gym, hit the spiritual gym, cultivate your sect, level up a little bit, and then maybe you'll get like a cool one, like, for example, a snake or a mountain ape. That's a good one. That's a really good one.
All right. All right.
You know, some people have like a little dog or a raccoon, and you can tell like that's not as impressive.
Hey, check out this loser's dog spirit.
Yeah, it kind of sucks. In fact, the joke in the first episode is our main character begins with one of the best of all spiritual pets. Pet seems like a bad word for it.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier. It doesn't seem respectful.
Yeah, that's how it's translated, but I really feel like it's not the right word.
Is slave better? Does slave work
no,
better?
No, not slave. No, companion, maybe. Spiritual companion. I'm going to go with companion. Our main character has a whale, like a full-on fucking whale.
That's not bad. That's not a bad
one.
That
kicks ass. And it flies through the air. It's fucking awesome.
It's a flying whale.
Yeah.
And I assume it can eat, like, everything. It can consume the world.
Well, it is called the all-devouring whale, so it's you are pretty much on the mark, yeah.
I think that if I was in this world, if I got isekai'd in there, my spirit companion would definitely be like an M1A1 Abrams tank, I think. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Have you been reading Ishira? That's a big part of it. So this is a really weird one. I know we don't talk a lot about like Chinese anime or like manhwa. I've read a couple of them. If you get into that side of it, you do end up reading a lot of soul cultivation. It is sort of like the D&D of like ancient China, in terms of like reoccurring magic systems. This is a big thing in China.
Are you saying that Romance of the Three Kingdoms is their Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, I mean, it's closer than Lord of the Rings is for sure. Well, I would say, Journey to the West is more like their Lord of the Rings.
Okay, sure. God, I would love to see an alternate universe where in like the 60s spiritual revival movement and like mysticism and naturalist movements that kind of spawned the popularity of Lord of the Rings and
nerd shit.
The path line is, and it's a very straight path you can draw between the publication of Lord of the Rings, the hippie movement picking up on like its pastoral idealism,
yeah,
and being like, all right, we're just going to do that, and creating Ren Fairs, and then Ren Fairs kind of assimilating into the board game / like miniatures wargaming kind of community, and yes, creating what we are calling modern nerd shit. Where instead, Journey to the West and Romance of the Three Kingdoms, and I don't know, I guess it kind of did in the 70s, but Taoism kind of became way more popular. And so we have like, instead of Dungeons and Dragons, we've got like Kung Fu table RPGs that kids were playing.
Oh, yeah.
During recess in middle school or whatever. Wouldn't that be great?
That'd be fucking kick ass. Journey to the West is cool. Look. Half of this is because, we grew up here, admired in Western mythology, and that's all like, King Arthur, Arthurian legend shit, which is like, passing old paganism through Christianity to create sort of Jesus Knights, essentially. Like, that's kind of what it is.
The Templar kind of archetype.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Uh-huh. King Richard, all that shit.
Sure.
And then you get, you pass through that into like Lord of the Rings, and then we end up with D&D being our dominant mythological culture. I gotta say, I prefer Journey to the West, man. Journey to the West fucking rocks. That shit is cool as hell.
Literally anything you read about monkey is like the craziest shit that has ever happened in fiction.
Sun Wukong beats up God.
Multiple times, beats up God. Not just the God, like all the smaller gods too. In fact, he gets kicked out of heaven for beating up gods too much. God is like, hey, you're too rowdy, monkey man. You got to get out of here.
That shit fucking whips, dude. What if King Arthur had instead like kicked God's ass? Like, he took Excalibur and the Holy Grail, and he was like, "I'm coming up there for you." That would have been so fucking cool. Sun Wukong is so awesome. like you said, this stuff filters through Taoism and then like modern Wuxia and becomes, I believe, what I call soul cultivation. They call Jianjia, which is a sub genre of Wuxia that involves more of the magical shit of Taoism legends into it.
Uh-huh.
And that's all like the soul cultivation shit and trying to attain more immortality by like sitting on the mount and practicing meditation and basically turning your back on humanity, which is really funny in the context of this Pokemon shit, because Pokemon is all about friendship, and this anime is also about friendship, even though it contains all those elements.
Do you only get the one companion, or do you build a team like Pokemon?
You can get as many as you want.
Now, is there?
I guess I should let me set this up, just because I haven't even said what the actual setup of the plot is. It's Chinese Pokemon, and our Ash is a sect leader. He has his own sect, so he's been very successful.
So he's already a master, you know, with pupils.
Yes, he is a master, and as a master, you have the right to be challenged, right, of course.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when you're challenged, you can't back down, so he's forced to go and take on a rival master. And he has the all-devouring whale, and the guy he's fighting has the flame ape, the flaming mountain ape.
The grape ape.
The grape ape. And grape ape goes absolutely insane in the ring and seemingly punches the whale so hard it goes insane and becomes a zombie whale. I'm not clear on the mechanics involved, but I guess that is a thing that can happen in these Pokemon fights.
Okay.
Is like somebody can be punched so hard they become a zombie. And the zombie whale, and this is something you don't see very often in Pokemon, the zombie whale kills its own master.
Oh.
Just right in the middle of the fight.
I mean, you know, there's been a key few episodes about Pokemon, you know, turning on their trainer or not listening. You know, you remember there's the whole thing about Charizard. He didn't listen to Ash because Ash was underleveled.
Yeah. Yeah. He did not kill Ash and eat him, though.
No, no. But he would have if he wanted to. He could have.
If this was a Grimdark Pokemon short film.
Yeah, I'm doing it again. God damn it.
He's doing it again. Luckily, because our man is the head of a sect and had assumed his family's secret techniques, he got very lucky here because it turns out his family's secret technique is soul restoration. And like I said before, because he's the good guy, he doesn't need like a stable of babies. He, in fact, his soul restoration triggers when somebody dies of an accidental death or natural causes within, I guess, parameters he's established. Because he's, you know, the head of the sect and he can do that shit. He's really good. He's, like, good at this shit.
Okay. All right.
And so a year later, somebody meets his criteria and he awakens in a body that mysteriously died. We do not get how this body died or any like that. He just comes back.
It's a convenient body.
Yeah. The body is in trouble, and he gets taken captive immediately, as it turns out, by his own sect. And they can't recognize him because he's in a different body. One of the problems with soul restoration, obviously, is you can't decide what you look like. It'd be a little too convenient, don't you think?
Well, I mean, you don't want everybody resurrecting his hotties. That throws off the natural order of things.
No, no. Just the family that developed the secret technique. Just that one family. That's it.
Oh, they're all coincidentally all hotties.
Yeah. But here's the big twist. Here's what kicks off the plot of the show. Because when he comes back, it has been a year, and he immediately discovers that his family's all-devouring whale, that was their specialty. His whole family fought with all-devouring whales.
Okay.
He finds out because his all-devouring whale, like, went insane and ate him, all-devouring whales were killed off, like, all of them. Like, the all-devouring whale is now extinct as a species of spiritual companion.
Did they just die, or were they killed on purpose?
No, they were hunted. They were hunted to death.
That seems like a bit of an overreaction.
There was an imperial decree that was like, all-devouring whales have the possibility of ascending into, like, evil zombie form, so let's just kill all of them. Let's just have all of them murdered. Which is the kind of thing a Chinese emperor can do.
Yeah, no, and they do it often, quite often, actually. This does bring up the question, how can you hunt a spirit to extinction? Does not it being a spirit imply some kind of, non-corporeal existence that can't exactly be killed?
See, you are trapped in your typical gaijin Western chauvinism.
Oh, no.
The idea that a spirit is like some kind of transcendental being that can be removed from the earth, whereas a spiritual companion is of the earth.
Okay.
Just because they use bodies of energy doesn't mean that they are not creatures that are alive within humanity.
Well, I mean, with that rule system, it kind of takes away a little bit of the allure of being immortal now, doesn't it?
I think the allure of being immortal is that you don't die. I think that's kind of the cool part of it. I don't think that allure is ever going to fade.
But they did die. They did die.
He did
though.
Die. Yes. Okay. Here's the distinction. He was not a soul cultivation master. He was just the master of his own sect, which means he was the boss of a gym. He was not elite four status.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right.
Yeah. He was not on that level. Like, he was good, but he's not that good. That's why he has to use the soul restoration technique, which is just passed down in his own family. It's kind of a cheat. Anyway, he wakes up a year later and his favorite Pokemon has been annihilated, wiped from the face of the earth. And he's pretty pissed off. This is not a good thing for him because that was kind of like his big move.
That was his thing. That was his thing. Yeah.
You know, it's like if Brock didn't have his Geodude or Onix, it'd be like, it would not be good for him.
Yeah, it does bring up a question. Like, they just let anybody be a gym trainer in Pokemon. Presumably, this guy had to put in a little bit more work than fighting 10-year-olds.
He did. He definitely did. Because he had to learn Kung Fu.
Yeah.
I mean, right off the bat, that is way harder.
Well, listen, learning Kung Fu, that's like step one. That is introductory level.
Oh, you can't even... You can't even take the first step until you've mastered some kind of Kung Fu. I mean, for your parents' sake, I hope it's your family's Kung Fu style, but it doesn't have to be. You could be a Shaolin monk and learn the Shaolin style.
Sure.
You could develop your own style, like the Drunken Master, of course.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what's important is you have a style. And at that point, you can start building up your spiritual energy to the point where a spiritual companion will accept you as a master. And then you can get eaten by your spiritual companion. You can restore into some asshole's body, find out that all of your favorite Pokemon have been wiped out of the earth, except by complete accident, you happen to find one that was in hiding because some weird asshole is like one of those creepy dudes who collects animals off the near extinction list.
So he comes back from the dead in a new body. And I assume that this is kind of a thing where no one really has a problem recognizing him. They just kind of perceive his aura the same.
Nobody recognizes him.
Oh, nobody recognizes him.
He looks completely different. Nobody knows who this dude is now.
Okay. So he's effectively starting off from square one again. And he comes back and he essentially has to get the last remaining example of his preferred spirit Pokemon type from a Joe Exotic kind of like animal importer kind of guy.
Yes, exactly. Like an exotic pet asshole.
Uh-huh.
Who has this thing in hiding because, again, it's not made explicit, but I have to assume the Emperor came out and said, like, you can't keep those things. Like, it's illegal now.
He's running an illegal spirit petting zoo down in, like, South Florida.
Well, you know, he's a rich asshole, and they can get away with all kinds of shit. But luckily for us, our dude happens to stumble upon it and he just jacks it. He just takes it.
Stealing's that's kosher.
Well, the companion was like the companion is like one of these spiritual companions. So obviously it can tell when it's compatible with a guy, right? Uh-huh. So it's cool with it.
I guess I never asked a very important question. Can the spirit companions talk?
No.
No. Okay.
Not that I know.
So, like a Pokemon, you're left to you have to intuit their meanings.
Yeah, you got to kind of have a subliminal bond.
Okay. All right. You need to have a deep spiritual connection.
Yeah, I mean, you could maybe like feel like it's a little more important than it is, but yeah, he jacks it, and that's where our story begins. Now he has to, like, reclaim his sect, he has to prove himself, and on top of all that, his best Pokemon is illegal to own. That's like, what if Ash threw out his Pikachu and they were like, okay, you're under arrest, your ass is under arrest. That would be tough.
That is
so it's
tough.
It's a long road.
What was that called again? Honestly, this sounds, like, pretty cool.
It's called the All-Devouring Whale. There is some insanely detailed Pokemon fight animation in it, which is pretty wild. It looks good. There's some crazy animation in this shit. But also, and here's the really important part in connection to the Wuzha theme of today. They kung fu fight during the Pokemon fights.
The trainers fight each other while the spirit animals fight.
And their Pokemon.
And they have to fight each other's Pokemon?
Yeah.
Oh.
They'll fucking fight the Pokemon, too.
See, that is generally considered poor form in a Pokemon fight.
Yeah, I know. This is the Grimdark thing. This is another Grimdark Pokemon thing where why don't the trainers just fight? Well, in this version, they do. And they do kung fu fights, and it's fucking awesome.
Now, is this animated or is this a manhwa?
No, this is a show.
This is a full-ass show.
Yeah, this is a full-ass show. It has a comic. It's based on a comic, but this is like an anime. This is like an actual anime.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I've definitely got to check this out.
There's some wild shit going on. In fact, I only know about it because one of the animations of the like second fight in this show went viral. Just like a couple clips of the animation, and people are like, "Holy fucking shit!" So you know, there's some good shit happening. There's some stuff happening in this. The plot is sort of like, yeah,
I've
got
to see what these spirit animal designs look like.
They look like animals. There's a cactuar.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Also, don't call it that. I don't like it when people say it like that. Cactuar with a W.
Cactuar.
Cactuar.
Cactuar. Like Cactua.
I always call them cactors, you know, like a dinosaur.
Cactor. No, yeah. That's bad.
You think that's bad?
Oh, one final thing. I just to get it out of the way, because I know if you go into this and you see it, maybe you'll be disappointed. But there seems to be no distinguishing language-wise. There doesn't seem to be anything distinguishing whales from catfish. So it is a catfish whale. Just throwing it out there as a final point on the show. If you go in expecting a baleen whale, it is a catfish whale.
It is a cat. Like, now, when you say a catfish whale, do you... Oh, okay, I'm looking at it right now. I see what you mean.
It's a catfish whale.
It is really more reminiscent of a giant fish than a giant marine mammal. I will give you that. Although it does seem to have like kind of a cute like mini version. Maybe it can shrink down. Am I seeing that right?
Well, they start small.
They start small
and
then they
train
get bigger.
And get big. Yeah. That is very much Pokemon-like.
But it can't change its shape to, say, fit a scenario. It's always got to be a giant whale.
I would assume once it gets powerful enough that it probably doesn't shrink. Yeah. I mean, what would be the point of that?
See, I'm looking at it. This lady has a giant snake. That looks way cooler than a giant catfish.
Giant snakes are cool, but they're not as cool as the all-devouring whale who can eat anything and potentially destroy the world. I mean, if you extrapolate far enough.
Okay, well, when you put it like that, maybe it's a good thing that they got rid of all the all-devouring apocalypse whales.
Yeah, well, you know, if you think about public safety, I suppose that's true. I suppose that's true. But as an animal lover, I cannot condone the entire genocide of a species of Pokemon. I just can't go there.
It's too far. Yeah, it's too far.
It's too far.
All right, I had a manga that I was going to talk about, but we're running a little bit close on time here, so I think I'm going to save it for the next episode.
It's probably some pervert shit anyway.
Oh, it's definitely some pervert shit, but we'll get
to
it. I'll save it.
Okay, all right, we'll do a pervert shit episode next. We did just do Kakiguri, so maybe we're going too hard on it. Fuck it, let's do a pervert episode.
I'll let you know when I've had enough, okay? All right, beautiful, tall, handsome listeners, this has been Wuja Death Spiral. Thank you once again for listening in. You know, you're welcome for these TikToks that
welcome.
I put out. You're welcome.
You're welcome. Please and you're welcome.
Yeah.
Watch Dragon Tiger Gate.
Okay. I think I actually am going to watch Dragon Tiger Gate because I've seen most of the other big names that you threw out there. I've seen Hero. I've seen House of Flying Daggers. I've seen Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. That one has been on my list for a while, so I'm going to definitely check that out.
No, watch Dragon Tiger Gate. It is a beautiful follow-up to the Heroic Trio as well. It's got a lot of spiritual connections. There's a lot of thematic elements they have in common, and also they just, like, fucking, goddamn, they rule so hard.
Until next time, dear listeners,
bye! Shadow is the really good one. That one's fucking crazy.